Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour. Before we get started with tonight's show, and really we've started, but I mean before we get into our specific topic, just want to let you know that tomorrow afternoon, this is going to be from the 1 to 3 p.m. hour Eastern time. That would be from noon to 2 p.m. Central, or 10 to noon Pacific time. I will be on Republic Broadcasting Network with Greg Evenson on Voices from the Heartland, and it's going to be a very interesting show tomorrow. We're going to talk about who some of the shadow controllers are behind what is going on virtually across the planet. We're witnessing the economies crashing all over the world. And when I say crashing, I don't just mean the value of the money. Cars and trucks and all kinds of vehicles are piling up docks and parking lots and depots, and they can't find enough space to store these things. Of course, when cars aren't selling, oil's not selling. But you don't see the price of oil going down because they have an overflow of it. They're ratcheting up the prices again. And there's a lot of starvation going on. People are being thrown out of their houses. Houses are being foreclosed. And people are living in tents across the United States. You don't hear about that in the media whatsoever. And it's going on. So we're going to be talking about some of those things and who's behind that. We're going to discuss the massive embezzlement, which is still going on, of trillions and trillions of dollars. And now even many of the other networks are broadcasting the figures that I've virtually been talking about for the past 2 to 3 years. Now, finally, they're coming on board seeing this, and I'm not the only one that's been talking about this, but I have been pretty much a solitary voice in the United States. In addition to that show, I have about an hour break, and then beginning, that would be 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, I will be on the Zero Point Show, and we're here on BBS Radio with Dr. Christopher Holmes for 2 hours. And the first hour, I will be interviewed, and the second hour, I will be interviewing him. So that's going to be quite an interesting show. So I'm loaded up this weekend, and I hope you tune in. There's going to be a lot of really interesting information coming out from myself as well as my guest on Christopher Holmes' show, Zero Point. So be sure to tune into Station 1 on BBS tomorrow afternoon as well. With that, I would like to invite tonight's guest back. He's with us every week. He is a scientist, inventor extraordinaire. He is also an author, lecturer, and teacher, and he's my co-host every Friday night here on Evident Footprints. And when we have technical problems and I get bumped off the air, he does a great job filling in for me. So I welcome back my good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. Thank you so much for that. How are you tonight?
I'm doing really well. You know, people have been praying for my father, and I should extend a thank you to everyone that has been doing that. My father, who about, 12 hours before the life support was pulled, some time ago, and we're talking about a month ago, my father came out of a coma. And I prayed at least that he would make it to his birthday, his 84th birthday, which was March 13th, and he made it to that day. And a week later now, he's sitting up for extended periods of time, and he's actually talked a few times. When you have a massive stroke, the doctors are saying 95% of the time, the person ends up being a vegetable. So this is not the end of it yet, but the prayers are still welcomed and appreciated, and we're experiencing more miracles. It's just a testament to our Creator and the perfection of the universe, and when we align our intention with it, we can produce miracles as regular events. And my thanks go out to all the listeners out there who have been praying, and I ask you to please keep us in your prayers. So, to answer your question, I'm doing pretty good tonight. How about yourself?
Well, that's wonderful, wonderful news about your dad. I'm very happy for you, and I'll certainly continue to remember him in my prayers.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Jim.
And as far as how am I doing, I'm okay. I have no major complaints.
Well, I'm sure you're pretty fired up about our topic. We've been talking about power, and we've been talking about energy sources and advanced technologies. We've been talking about everything, you and I, for the duration of my show since I began broadcasting. We've talked about just about everything, and you are quite knowledgeable about many things, and I know that we had planned to continue our discussion because we do go off on tangents a bit, but these things are important, and we may end up going off on tangents again tonight, but we always have next week, don't we?
Let's hope so.
Yeah, that's a good response. I know there were a few things that you wanted to discuss, and so I'm going to allow you to sort of control the flow of this information, and I may butt in from time to time, or you may invite me to butt in.
Well, I definitely think that it's a better deal when you share the information flow with me. But if you'll allow me just a few minutes, what will probably be a good thing for the sake of the listeners would just be to recap the last portion of what we covered last week so that we can get into the more significant aspect of tonight's show. I think we had closed with kind of a recap of unconventional power sources that various inventors down through the years had pursued in one way or another. And we talked about gravity motors, permanent magnet motors. We went off on one tangent with the Russian invention of the cyclomic generators, which are essentially machines controlled directly by the mind through their shape. And then we talked a little bit about the Tesla magnifying transmitter, cosmic ray detectors, which step down the ultra-high frequencies associated with cosmic rays until they are at a frequency level that can power more conventional appliances. And then we talked about energy resonance and power oscillations. And I think we ended up with the subject of tapping the zero-point energy. And then my closing remark, and it really was closing because it sneaked in under the wire just as the final moments of the show were commencing. And I said, you know, even if we acknowledge that some of these things have existed and can be perfected if they're not suppressed, is mankind ready for decentralized power? And then we touched on the more traditional things that are leading in that direction, like windmills and wind farms and the new relationship that seems to be blooming between home generation systems and the power grid. And then my closing comment was, how would these things affect our freedom? And that's where you really got excited about bringing in the contrasting idea of how political power is so radically different from natural power or electrical power or whatever you want to call the God-given agency by which we can do work for mankind. It's just funny that the two elements have the same name, and yet they're so radically different. So you've got power on the one hand representing the rate at which some agency can perform useful work, and power on the other hand is almost the rate at which some agency can perform non-useful work.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, that's kind of where we are in this presentation.
Yeah. You and I had an off-the-air discussion where we brought up an issue that there are several kinds of power that operate on this planet. Number one, we have this power that sort of mimics the type of power that we use to drive machinery or to make equipment run or to perform various tasks. And this power has been adapted to a number of, shall we call them, consumer entertainment appliances. You know, the television, the radio, stereo equipment, and then the tiny little things. Walkman and iPods and cell phones have become these types of things. By the way, Jim, I keep getting chat messages that we have a caller on the line, and I want to get into this discussion a little bit. So, Leo, I think it's Leo from Massachusetts. If you could please hang on, we will get to your call. I think I'll be able to sort of bring you into the conversation if you give us a few minutes here. So we're talking about how energy and the use of energy and power, and in other words, the way we produce power and how it's been adapted to all these devices that, and I guess we can include video games as well, to capture or captivate our attention in areas that are really not that important. They may be entertaining. They may give us some sense of satisfaction, escapism from the drudgery of working, driving to work, driving home, the chores that we have to do throughout our lives that just seem to become an endless stream, but an endless cycle, sort of like being on the hamster wheel. And while this is going on, there are other technologies being developed, and they're being developed primarily in ways to be used against us, to capture that other power, or to exercise and achieve that other power, which is the power over other beings, as if somebody has a right. And I strongly attested to the fact that this is contrary to creation. It's contrary to how God created the universe. It is a free will universe. And these people think, okay, I have free will. I'm going to exercise my free will, or we will exercise our free will to dominate the masses. And that's what's occurring. So those are the two types of power that you and I discussed. And there is sort of an analogy between the two. And a connection between the two, because though there are advances in the scientific application of that, it's always used against the people, to control the people. So I guess what I'm asking for is power for the people. So Go ahead, Jim.
Well, yeah, that was the thing that was fascinating about it. I mean, I spent most of my engineering career studying power. Mm-hmm. And, of course, power in that regard is the rate of the rate at which work is done, you know, per unit time, mm-hmm. which, of course, governs just about everything that we want to do. And yet, interestingly enough, in trying to bring out ideas concerning that issue, you run into the other type of power, which is the brute force that wants to control the masses and doesn't want their agenda interfered with. Mm-hmm. And that's where our off the air chat went earlier today when we were talking about how do you contrast these two types of power. And I think the remark I made which set you off was when I mentioned the fact that Wilhelm Reich came to the conclusion in his investigations that political power, or not so much political power, but the lust for political power and love are mutually exclusive. And according to his analysis, control freaks and people who are obsessed with wielding power are incapable, those types of people are incapable of experiencing any form of genuine love or affection.
Mm-hmm.
So they have sacrificed that ability in their lives for the opposite pole, so to speak, where they can boss people around and get some sort of a high out of that instead of sharing the God-given gift of a loving embrace or some form of tenderness with another person. And it's a sad state of affairs, but it seems as if most of the world is going in that direction these days.
Well, you got that right. I'm inclined to agree with you. Definitely. I guess, why don't we try for a moment? Because I don't think it's fair to make Leo wait all night. He doesn't call in all that often, but if you don't mind, we can field the question. I think what we're talking about at this point maybe it might be in reference to what he's wanting to contribute to the conversation. Leo from Massachusetts, are you there?
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I'm more into a wide spectrum, a broad spectrum paradigm shift, if you want to entertain an idea that I have towards.
Well, I guess we're sort of talking about the matrix in a sense. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I'm thinking about, you know, changing, altering our consciousness by putting out a certain manifesto that I've kind of constructed this concept. And it seems to be getting pretty good play. It's pretty short, basically. And the question basically is, do we want our country back, or would you rather be a bunch of good Germans? And to this effect, I want to have 10 do's and 10 don'ts as the primaries aspects, and have them broken down between the basic city, suburban country demographic, and then whatever economic demographic you fall into, so that we can have a piece that everyone can do no matter where you fall in the demographic to stop this juggernaut of the New World Order. And that's the paradigm shift. And I think I would like to see it as a manifesto put out and signed on to by bunches of people agreeing together, you know, because the more the merrier, and you're much more powerful that way. And have it start out as a manifesto, and then have it turn into a small mini movie that goes on the internet.
Leo, let me clarify something. When you say, "Do we want to be a bunch of good Germans?" I mean, what would make you say that? Wouldn't we want to be a bunch of good Americans? Or
I know, but good Germans is the image. In other words, are we going to stand up for a republic, or are we just going to lay down and be a bunch of good Germans? And I think that is the image we need to project.
Okay, you're speaking of how the non-responsive reaction when the Nazis were taking over Germany.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's why the good German is a really good metaphor for the alternative to taking back our country.
Well, I think it applies equally here in America. I mean, you have the majority of the American people are not paying attention at all to what's going on. They
right.
they don't have a clue.
But I mean, I think this paradigm shift can be achieved, but we need to get something that we can some basic. I mean, I think 10 basic things to do and 10 basic things not to do would be a quick start, and if we could bring it into each demographic that we possibly can, it could have a multitude of effects in all. I'm looking for something that could be possibly pervasive as the housing crisis in a positive direction.
Well, yeah, you seem to be touching on quite a few things. I want to give Jim a chance to respond. I don't know what he would respond to at this point, but let me say something that might clarify what I think you're trying to say. And it really requires more discussion about this. In fact, that's what I'm going to be talking about tomorrow with Greg Evenson as well as Dr. Christopher Holmes. I'm going to really get into this topic on a totally different level, probably something a bit different from what you're used to hearing. But let me say this. There is an agenda that has been orchestrated for hundreds of years. This has been going on, and we really could go back several thousand years. You could go back before the time of Christ, even, and see that there has been, we have two factions. We have a faction of the left. We have the faction of the right, and the left has always been the evil side, or in more modern days, it's been this threat of communism, and on the right, we have this threat of Christianity. And I say the threat of Christianity because if you look at all Christians today, they don't agree on what Christianity is. It's a contrived religion, and now, don't misunderstand me, and there are people out there, wait a minute, I'm a Christian, what do you mean it's contrived? Jesus didn't ask anyone to establish a religion to follow what he did. He showed us by example what was right. And it's been turned into something other than what he taught. And that is the tool that has been created to fight politics. But in reality, the two are working for the same cause. And it's called British Israelism.
Yeah, I sent that one out, the Ken Adachi thing. After hearing Ken, I looked it up and found it. And I tend to take things and simplify them because, I mean, I find that even though I'm only 63, I grew up in the 60s, and we had all this garbage thrown at us and these images, pop, 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 pop. And I think that was a very bad thing they did to us because we were expected to instantly assimilate a whole pattern when I think it's bad for your mind not to have the time to pursue it and look at it thoroughly. And I think this was done purposely by the New World Order types.
Well, yeah, they've created chaos and confusion. And really, the power that we're talking about, you know, before you called in, this issue of greed and power, this insatiable quest for power over all living things on this planet is a sort of insanity, and it's contrary to the universal laws. It's contrary to the Creator's laws, and it's contrary to free will. I want to give Jim a chance to comment on this, if you don't mind, Leo.
Well, actually, the first thing that came into my mind. Ooh, we got a bad problem.
Board up.
Can you hear me okay?
maybe you could cut Leo's audio back a little bit. That might be creating a loop.
I haven't done anything.
No, I'm not blaming it on you, Leo. It's just a thing about levels. There. Try again, Jim.
Yeah, the first thing that entered my mind when Leo made his opening remarks, Don, was that a manifesto of any kind regardless of how properly designed it is, has to somehow be propagated throughout the entire country if it's going to have an impact. And my first thoughts were, regardless of what the informational package turns out to be, did you have any specific agenda in mind for actually introducing this information, considering the fact that the media is controlled by these people, and the print and the printing presses are controlled by these people, and so are the newspapers?
Yeah, that I don't know if Leo heard that.
I heard it. Now, could I kind of reply to that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, my thoughts run to this. You know the old standard water cooler hangout that somebody puts on a water cooler? Now, if this is written with enough humor laced with a meaning behind it, I think it can be devastating, because if it's funny enough to pass around and just rakes the whole, I mean, something like, I mean, I was just thinking about it today, like this whole carbon, this whole carbon BS, the CO2 stuff. And so basically, if we want to really cut out the CO2, we should tax politicians' hot air. You know, stuff like that, that really resounds with the public, and put that in and lace all of these do's and don'ts with that theme, it will go up on the water coolers, and it will go viral, and the media can't do anything about it. It'll have a life of its own. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, they're trying to outlaw bumper stickers right now.
I know.
I mean, and if you start putting stickers on water coolers, that next they're going to try to start outlawing that. Then they'll outlaw the water coolers. Then they'll outlaw the water. I mean... You know, it's getting quite ridiculous. We're not allowed to say war. We're not allowed to say war on what's that word?
War on terror.
I can't say that word. It's against the law now. I'm shaking in my boots here.
Actually, what it is, it's the war on terror. TERRA.
Yeah, exactly. That's the New England accent, right?
I don't know.
Well, I see what you're saying. I mean, what you should do, Leo, is sit down and write out a bunch of these ideas that you have. Write them out. And,
I've spoken to Joel Salente. I've spoken to Jason on Alex Jones. And I've spoken to a few people. You know, I want people like Joel Salente and Bob Chapman and Greg Evanson to all be weighing in, and, you know, and Officer McLam and Colonel Roberts and all of these people that and have a wide spectrum of people, left and right, not just the Patriots. You know, I want the Patriots to be in with the two lefties and the two righties who really do want our country back.
Yeah. I appreciate your comments, and I think what you should do, sit back and listen to what Jim and I are going to talk about tonight.
Okay, I'm going to hang up then.
And then I appreciate your call, because I think we could spend a lot of time talking about this, and we won't handle the topic that we have prepared for tonight.
Okay.
We'll be talking about this tomorrow, at least for 4 hours, so try to tune into those shows, okay?
Well, unfortunately, I'm going off to a demo tomorrow, so I'll probably have to catch it on the archive.
Okay. Well, right. We appreciate your call, and we'll take into consideration what you're saying, too.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks, Leo. Okay. Okay, Jim. I was hoping that we could sort of tie that in, and in a sense, you know, the topic is there, but we could get into all kinds of different ideas and stuff, and I think we need to have a few explanations anyway. You know.
Well, there is one underlining theme that might be worth two minutes of chat on, and that is, and I've given this a lot of thought, and that is when you have information that's worthwhile and you want to get it out there to the people, you need a channel like the one we have here, for instance, where mm-hmm. we're endeavoring to do that. The thing is that not everybody listens to it, and then the ones that do listen to it wrestle with the concept of how qualified is the information. And it's amazing to me that you don't see any of that going on when it's coming across a standard network into your living room via the TV tube. You know, who gets up and tries to certify something that's broadcast by ABC or Fox or any of those people?
Yeah, that's a valid
point. Why is it that the stuff that's actually controlled by the wrong people is so readily accepted by the masses, and the stuff that would do them the most good is scrutinized to the point of not being considered?
Well, it's because it's always been imparted with this goal in mind. It's always been propaganda. It's always been about mind control and the subtle use of language. You and I have talked about that, how the language is twisted to mean something other than what it is. Or if they are not getting the proper response, they change it. It's like this decree that the media is not allowed to use the term war on terror, that term was invented by the Bush cabal, and we are beyond that. Or that to say that there isn't even terrorism now. Okay, where does this guy get off, this usurper sitting in the White House, get off telling people what words in the dictionary they can and can't use? Excuse me. You're not from this country. You haven't proven you're from this country. And until you do, you don't tell people what they can and can't say. I don't care who you think you are. That's my take. That's my rant right there. That's the truth. You know? So this idea that we can say this, or that the media has to do this, or, you know, I'm not part of the media. I don't consider myself part of the media. I'm a regular person that loves music and loves the truth and is sick and tired of watching people flush this country down the toilet. That's what I'm tired of.
I'm in the same boat as you are. I mean, I'm not anybody special, but I grew up in this country. And I have a very cherished notion about how it was and how it should be. And thank God that for whatever reason, my consciousness hasn't been blurred by all this mind control rubbish. Mm-hmm. And I have watched the degradation and the loss of the land that I was aware of since childhood over the last 35, 40 years or so. Mm-hmm. With an accelerating rate of alarm, I might add.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is my country. I have a birth certificate. I can show my birth certificate to anybody, okay? I have real parents, and I know who they are. I have a family. I have friends that can also prove the same thing. We got a guy sitting in the White House that can't admit where he's from. He can't, because he's a fraud. He's a phony. He's a usurper. He's a charade, a fake, a puppet. And we're going to let a puppet talk to us that way? That's insanity. That's insanity. And don't give me this thing about patriotism, or that's part of the brainwashing right there. Is to say that this is a Christian country, and that we have to follow Christian precepts, that the country is founded on Christianity. Wait a minute. Jesus didn't tell us to start Christianity. That's part of the lie right there, you see? That's what creates all the confusion and the chaos, is people don't know whether they should listen to the politicians or the preachers. And they're all corrupt. They're teaching a corrupt view and definition of God. They're teaching a corrupt view of what the Constitution is and what God-given rights are and sovereignty under the Creator. And they want us to listen to this claptrap. And I have to really watch my words because I don't want to become profane and lower myself to their level. So, anyways, I thought I was done with my rant, but...
Well, that was an appendix.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the encore.
Well, getting back to the main thrust of what we started with, which is really a fascinating topic, and that is, you know, how do you even define political power? I mean, I've always been fascinated by one aspect of that whole phenomenon, and I've talked to a lot of psychologists and people who study the mind to try and get a hook into just how that aspect of it works. You got a guy who either is elected or proclaims himself some sort of a leader, or however he gets into power is almost irrelevant. The point is, once he's there and acknowledged as such, you all of a sudden have all these morons that are willing to do his bidding. Based on what? Mm-hmm. I've never been able to get a hook into it. It's like, okay, we need you to rub out that guy over there. It's not, there's no debate about it. It's, gee, why would you want to kill that guy? He didn't do anything. No, it's just, oh, good. You know, now I get a chance to show, you know, how I respond to your bidding. And what mechanism allows that? You know, that is the most incredible thing when you stop and think of it. Because if you look at the atrocities that are committed worldwide under the auspices of somebody's power or another, it's mind-boggling that nobody questions anything. They just jump to the task, regardless of what it is, and they seem to do it with a great deal of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, understanding, you know, the mechanical output of an electric engine is a lot more directly obvious than it is to look at this mechanism of psychological and political power and question myself, how the heck does it really work? You know, why is it that a small handful of lunatics can control so many people's lives?
Because they allow them to do it. You know? Because they've created this whole scenario to put people in a position to just accept it. To blindly accept it. You know, you want to talk about the deaf, dumb, and the blind. And I'm not by any means putting down people with disabilities. I'm talking about the people ruling this country, the corruption. I mean, and you and I have talked about this endlessly, Jim, on this show and off the air. The amount of corruption that is occurring right now is immeasurable. And it just feeds off of itself. And to answer Leo's question, what we do is we create something else. It's not working through their system. Their system has been created to do what it does. And it's to drive everything into the ground. And if you don't want to be driven into the ground, you create something that lets you fly off of the ground. Get out of the box. Get out of the matrix. The power is an illusion. The power that they think they have over us is an illusion. And they know it. They know it. It's an illusion. The power inside a little Walkman or a little CD player or even an iPod, the iPod Nano that's it's like the size of a pack of matches that you can clip on your belt or your shirt with two little headphones. That's got more actual real power in it than this whole system that they've created because it's all based on illusion. It's not real. And I've talked about that many, many times on this show. That's why they use the technology that they develop against us and keep it a secret. different ways of producing power to drive equipment and machines and to perform all kinds of tasks effortlessly. They hoard that because they haven't figured out how to meter it yet, how to charge us for it. And when they do, they'll come up with some other gadget, some other toy for people to buy that they have to have, as if they don't have enough already. So, anyway, go ahead, Jim. I hope I wasn't overstepping my bounds in this conversation.
Oh, heavens, no. I mean, I was literally asking, for your opinion, because a lot of that is a mystery to me. It isn't so much the fact that there are groups who can exert power. I mean, that's always been the case. The strangest part about it seems to be, what are the internal workings that allow, that allow it to propagate from the head lunatic, down to the peons who are essentially his soldiers who carry out the commands,
Mm-hmm. Well,
if you look at it from a Freudian point of view, it's almost like that they snap to it so that they can get praise from daddy. You know, it's almost that kind of a thing, that they're missing something in their own lives, and just to get the praise and the recommendation of the leader, that these people will carry out any task that they're assigned without question, and without a concern for the morality of what they're doing, just so they can get a little pat on the head.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right, and one of the aspects of or one of the criteria, one of the requirements of being part of the gang, so to speak, or to be a player in their game, is to be as perverted as you possibly can be. It's a system which is perverted, and it's built and sustained by perversion of every kind. That's what the power is. It's about a vibration, a very low frequency vibration. And everything they do is intended to lower our vibration, because as they lower our vibration, or as they think they're lowering our vibration, they're lowering our consciousness, our awareness, our insight. And in doing so, and allowing them to do so, we are shirking our responsibility. We do have very high responsibilities, or responsibilities of a very high nature, a very high vibration, which is how the universe in its perfection was created. And it was created so perfectly that it does have a dichotomy of itself, but it's intended to be a balance, not an excess. So that's in a roundabout way, in a general way, that's the reason why this is happening and why it continues. I mean, why do we speak about the truth? Why do we offer another alternative than the one that the mainstream media gives us, or that they give us in the movies, or that the politicians give us? You know, when I think of the word politics, poly meaning more than one or many, and ticks, bloodsuckers. Many bloodsuckers. To me, that's what politics means.
That's pretty good. I like that.
I'm looking at the word. I didn't invent it. I'm just interpreting it, because that's what I see. Many thieves.
Well, you're
many
absolutely
liars.
You're absolutely correct, Ed, and the thing that's interesting about it is I really don't understand how the public can be so mesmerized by the halls of government to begin with. Because there has never been, and I dare say there never shall be, any politician anywhere who can do anything. What do they produce? Show me something worthwhile that comes out of Washington or any other capital, for that matter. It'll just never be. And yet, for some reason, all sorts of wondrous attributes are attributed to the government. And I think it's just a wish list that people have, you know, that they want to be taken care of by somebody. Well, actually, I think that you can divide the populace into two groups, at least two groups, because I know an awful lot of people that are disgusted by the idea of being taken care of. They want to do their own thing. And if they fall on their face, they've got the guts to get up and try again. There is no guarantee anywhere. So where did this idea ever come from that you have to be coddled from cradle to grave, especially by an organization that can't do anything right?
Yeah. Well, that, you know, you're seeing it for what it is. Most people don't even take the time to look at it that way or to find out what it is. They literally are told, you know, they're told which side of their bread to butter. They're told when to go to bed, when to get up, when to go to the bathroom, when to go to work, when to go home, and recycle the whole process again. And that's not why we're here. That is not why we're here. They've created a system, and they've got people into into a corner, painted into a corner where they think that they have to have jobs provided for them because they're not creative. They're not being creative. They're not being responsible. They're not being aware. They're not being awake. They're not exercising insight, and they're not exercising responsibility or consciousness. And there are plenty of people listening right now. Well, I'm conscious. Show us your conscious. Call in and let us know. Let us know why you think you're conscious. And tell us what you're doing to cause other people to be conscious. There's power in being conscious. There's no power in being unconscious or irresponsible or not actively participating in what you think this life on Earth should be like. Everyone is allowing someone else to do it for them. Well, you know, that to me, that there's not much difference between that and taking a bag of microwave popcorn and putting it in the microwave and turning the knob. But you got to pay the electric bill or you won't have the power to pop the popcorn, even in the microwave. We always look for an easy, convenient way to do things. And that's fine if everything else is in order. But we've allowed just this chaos and disorder to be orchestrated intentionally. You know, it's problem, reaction, solution. And the people aren't doing it. It's handed to you on a silver platter. All of those situations. Problem, reaction, solution. They create the problem, they cause you to react, and then they offer you the solution. And every time you accept that solution, every time you tolerate the problem and react the way they plan for you to react, you're giving them a little bit more of your power. Not you, Jim. I'm just saying to the listening audience.
Oh, I know darn well you don't mean me.
Go ahead.
No, that's absolutely true. I agree with you. And the thing that's strange about it is, why is it that nobody recognizes the overall plan of action? It's just so strange to me. It always comes back to the idea of consciousness. You know, I remember a good point that brings this out. When I was a kid, in school, I had a lot of problems because I was basically different. And one of the things that I realized, but not at that time, only years later, I was laboring under the assumption that other people's minds worked the way mine did. And that's what leads to a lot of difficulties. When you're a kid, you don't necessarily question that stuff, and yet you're quickly singled out if you're different And then you have to put up with the consequences of being that way. But it almost seems as if there's a certain level of mediocrity, and anything that is above or below that is automatically indicated as a potential problem. Now, the ones that are below the level of mediocrity are labeled with all kinds of different titles for the sake of identifying them in a certain way. We don't have to go into that. But the ones that are above the level of mediocrity somehow present a much greater threat. And as a result of that, anything that that they bring to the table is not only scrutinized, but oftentimes rejected, with the net result that the net mass remains approximately the same. And, you know, I'm awful fond of the work of Wilhelm Reich. I mention him in a lot of different instances. He wrote a fascinating book. I don't know if you've ever read it or not. It's called The Murder of Christ.
And no,
basically, what it touches upon is, why does humanity always destroy its saviors? And it uses the story of Christ as an example simply because most people are familiar with it. But basically, what the message is that people become so entrenched in a given mode of activity, and it doesn't have to be pleasant. It can even be something that they continuously complain about, like income tax, for instance, or social injustices of various types, you know, whatever it may be. They may not be happy with it, but they're familiar with it. And it then gets woven into the fabric of their lives. And when somebody comes along and says, why are you down there tolerating that stuff? If you come up here, you'll be at a totally different level and you'll be free from all of that. Apparently what happens is that the fear of making that quantum change from the level that they're at to the one that they are looking up at is greater than the discomfort that they have learned to accept as a regular basis of life. And so they usually choose to remain where they are. And if the messenger is too insistent, they'll just kill him because they don't want to be reminded of their plight.
Yeah, and that's called denial, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
That's what a circuit breaker is, isn't it? Or a fuse in a power system? It's the same thing. It denies it. It denies the power to flow through. And when you brainwash somebody enough, when you mind control them or propagandize them, and I'm making words up here, you know, in a sense, or when you subject them to mind control and propaganda, they see the illusion as the reality and they accept it as their reality and they deny that the option is a reality itself, even though they're absolutely staring the truth in the face.
Well, I see that a lot in technological issues.
Absolutely.
And we've talked about that too, you know.
Yeah.
So it works in every facet of human experience. And I don't know exactly why we're saddled with that particular limitation, as it were. But it's a very, very powerful form of impedance. And I've often wondered where the human race would be now if that wasn't capitalized upon so effectively. It's really remarkable. You can bring up anything that's contradictory to the established norm, and you'll get an enormous reaction out of it, but it'll never be a logical reaction. It's usually an emotional reaction.
Yeah.
You know, and that tells you something right there.
Yeah, you're talking about the habitual use of mind control and the habitual use of propaganda. Advertising is a form of propaganda in and of itself as well. And it's a form of mind control and a form of brainwashing. Because at the point where the person finally makes the decision that they have to have something, even though they don't ask themselves that question, do I have to have this car? Do I have to have this makeup? Do I have to buy these diapers for my baby? Do I have to eat this kind of food? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do that? No one ever asks that question. They just find themselves doing it. And you know, the extreme example is an obsessive compulsive person that shops till they drop. You know, they're living in a $100,000 house that's going to cost them $300,000 after 30 years of payments, and they've run up a $100,000 credit card bill because of being a compulsive shopper. I mean, you've heard stories like this where people have rooms stacked with boxes that they haven't even opened, things that they've ordered off of television shows and through the mail and wherever they're exposed to this. And they're given that ability because the intention is to control them and to profit from controlling them, to profit financially from controlling a person. And it boils down, Jim, to people having free will as a birthright. They were given free will, and they were always, and they still have the ability to make a choice. They can choose. No one's saying you have to choose this, but they're following the roadmap. They're following the menu that's handed to them, as if to say, here's 100 items on the menu, but this is what you have to eat off of the menu. And they don't question it. They don't question why the menu's there. If you can only eat that one thing off of the menu, why do that? Now, some people are saying, well, I go to a restaurant and I order what I want, but you can only eat what that restaurant is serving you. You can only eat the foods that they give you, and if there's toxins in the food, you have to eat those with the food. And they sell toxins with impunity. All the time. They're intentionally putting toxins in the food. And the same in their pharmaceutical drugs. And they're putting toxins in what they teach the kids in school. Mind toxins. To dumb them down and to cause them to not be responsible and to disable their capacity to make a choice. An independent, sovereign choice. No, it's, you must do it this way, and this is the penalty if you don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, in school, we call those people bullies, didn't we?
Yes. Well, there's quite a bit of parallel between the bully in the schoolyard and the bully in front of the classroom, you know.
Yeah. But see, it's all done through illusion. These people, one-on-one, they can't take on the average individual. You know, they have to buy their way to power, you see. They have to entrap others in their system of greed and corruption. They have to be able to blackmail them or extort them to get them to do their bidding. They have to turn them their sexual preferences to something abnormal. And that's what I was alluding to when I was describing perversions. That's the reality. But do you think the average, even when people see it, you see, they're promoting this on television, they're promoting all of these perversions as if it's normal. I mean, you can't watch a movie without seeing a commercial about some kind of penile drug that they're selling. Or female vibrators. And people are stupidly falling for the trap. I mean, if your life is that bad that you've got to buy stuff that you see on TV, then it's lost. It's a lost cause for you. I choose not to follow that path. And anyone that's half awake is going to make their own choices. But you have to have enough confidence in the fact that God gave you that right when you were born. And it's about time that you reclaim that power. I've tried to bring us back to power.
Yeah, well, I know exactly what you mean. As a matter of fact, getting back to what you said earlier about the compulsive buyer, the thing about that I find totally amazing, if somebody comes up to you with a gun and demands, let's say, $1,000 from you, we consider that robbery. But if you're coerced into spending the same $1,000 for garbage that you don't need, somehow that's okay all the way around. And to my way of thinking, it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's a different kind of robbery, isn't it? It's presented in a different way. It's presented and repeated over and over again, knowing full well that if you pay attention long enough or subconsciously, that you'll subconsciously spend the money on that product.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how it all works, you know.
I mean, you got to give credit to the system. You know, it was cleverly devised, but it's evil at the same time.
Well, I always think about it from the standpoint of all of the energy and the money that went into devising it. It's just amazing because all you'd have to do is exert the same effort and the same financial support in a 180 degree direction away from that, and you'd have a utopian world. Why is the preference always for the negative?
Well, because you're talking about negative entities. You know, they're of a low vibration. They can only be negative, Jim.
Well, see, that's the part that's difficult to comprehend, because like a friend of mine says about there's two basic types of minds. You know, there's the retrospective thinker and the prospective thinker. And the prospective thinker is a person who always looks forward, has the ability to focus into the future, has the ability to coalesce data and organize it in such a pattern that he can almost see what's going to happen. And then you've got the retrospective thinker, which can only rely on things that worked for him in the past. And so their error on making decisions is extraordinarily high. It's like driving through traffic, you know, only looking in the rearview mirror. And yet, the thing that's interesting is that you've got these two types of people, and this is a well-known fact that they both exist. When you are one type, it's almost impossible to imagine how the other type thinks. And so, even within the humankind itself, we actually have at least two species or subspecies. And it's just the only difference is the wiring of the brain.
Well, Jim, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so it's when you're in one category, it's very, very difficult to imagine how the other category thinks and how they rationalize their behavior.
Yeah, we brought this topic up on another show, and I did a whole 2 months of monologues and guest shows where we focused on this topic. And maybe it's worth just for a brief moment jumping back to it. We're already running out of time here. when you speak of things from a past tense, the ego is involved. Okay. The mind-heart that has been created through this system of mind control and propaganda, the mind heart, feeling things because of the thoughts that you are directed to feel, because of the message and the delivery system used to bring the message forward, to offer the message. And that's the wording, and that's the imagery, and the sounds, and all the things that are woven together in what's called a commercial, or what's called the news, or what's called a movie, or what's called a TV program, is constructed using these same techniques. And when they speak about what happened, they're always going back to the past, and so the ego has to be part of that. When you speak about the future, you automatically accept it as the opposite of the past, do you not?
I hope so.
Okay. And yet, we speak about the future always somewhere in the back of our mind, even if it's only subconsciously, holding on to the past. Okay? We were speaking about power, and we were speaking about technology, and that they give us the primitive power, and they come up with new devices, ways to sell us the primitive power, the primitive energy, they call it, right? When it's really power, correctly, it's power. So they're selling us primitive power, primitive devices, because they have more advanced technology, more advanced power, and more advanced devices. And we always get the primitive version of it because it lowers the vibration. It keeps the vibration focused on a certain frequency where one is not aware, one does not have insight, one does not have knowledge, one does not exercise wisdom. And so they make choices based on past experiences. And that is the hamster wheel that we so often talk about. That's the matrix. That's the box. That method. Now, I'm not putting down the future, but in the real sense of time, everything is an eternal now. So the past and the future are really illusions. If the creation is all in the now, free of time, then we should be thinking about who we are being, not who we are going to be, or not about who we were. Not the way things were, not the way they're going to be, but the way they are being now. We are human beings. And we have to be in the now to be called human beings. If we're living in the past, we are not human beings. We are has-beens. We're not even alive in that sense. I don't know if that makes sense, but I felt that it was important to say it.
No, it does make sense, and I know exactly what you mean by that. The problem is, how do you convey concepts of that type, which are somewhat etheric, you know, to people that are already anchored in the other reality? That's the challenge.
Well, they have to be able to make the choice. And so the explanation I gave is one aspect of it. Maybe it's too ethereal for some people. But those that are listening to the show right now, including the intelligence agencies, know exactly what I'm talking about. And what you're talking about, they know we're right. Or they wouldn't feel threatened to have to listen to the show. I'd like to think they're listening to learn something, you know, because there are people that do see what's going on and understand what's going on and can anticipate what they plan to do. That's no big feat. It probably makes them pretty angry that somebody can figure out their game as complex as they've made it. But that's all it is. It's a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors and illusions. Jim, we've got a call. I think Dr. Christopher Holmes is on the line. Is that correct?
Hi, good evening, Don. Well, thank you for your show, and I think you've had some real insights into kind of the degenerate psyche of the elites. And I wondered, maybe I just might comment. My interest, as you know, is in the psychology of human consciousness. And in mystical teachings, it said a human being has seven energy centers or chakras in the body, and the heart chakra is the central one.
Yes.
And it is said most people are controlled by the three lower chakras, and they're associated with money, sex, and power. Those are the principal motives of the lower nature of a human being, money, sex, and power. And you see that completely in the psychopathology of the elites.
Mm-hmm.
And they never get to the level of awakening of the human heart. And that's the next level in human evolution, the first level to awakening is of the heart. And you find this heart doctrine teaching in all of the religions. It's in Christianity, Judaism, and Kabbalah, the Blavatsky secret doctrine, Islam, all the major religions elaborate the heart doctrine, that a human being's essential I is connected to the heart. And unless you awaken in the heart, it is said you're driven crazy by the monkeys of the mind.
Yes.
These people, as you described, they what's created in them by the false educational system and the conditioning of the media is a completely false consciousness system centered in the mind, in the head. And that's controlled by the three lower chakras.
Yes.
And these people, in a way, they lose their souls. Like, if you in your life don't develop and attain real I, you don't attain your soul, and you're drawn into the lower realms upon death.
Mm-hmm.
See, I would say everybody, in a way, there's a form of nothingness at the heart of being. And in the mystical teachings, they describe this. In Kabbalah, it's you have the zimzum, and it creates this nothingness within your heart. And then people are afraid of the nothingness because they want to be something. So they want to have sex or own things or be something. And they create false ego trying to escape the nothingness in their heart. And their heart is turned evil into every kind of depravity, which is what these people are like. They're degenerate in every possible function.
Mm-hmm.
Their greed, their sexual perversions, and so on. So they're really a degenerate level of human beings who've never attained to that next level in human evolution. And they've held back humankind on this planet by conditioning and fostering that lower nature in human beings, degenerating everything they can, and through the TV and so on. So in mystical teachings, the mystics aim to know thyself. But that one yogi says it involves a dissolution of the false mind into the lotus of the heart. So it's the awakening of the heart. And that's what people, I feel today, we need to attain to the level of the heart and attain to our soul. And in a way, like, what benefits a man if you gain the whole world but lose your soul? And that's what these elites are like. They don't even realize for themselves what they've created in their afterlife conditions. They've lost their souls.
Yes, I agree. Jim, do you want to comment on what Dr. Holmes just said?
No, I actually agree with what he said. I'm excited that he has the insight and the experience to be able to put it so succinctly. The one thing that is somewhat mysterious, though, is there again, why is it that the lowlifes, be they elite or not, are the ones that always rise to power? That's the part that's so odd.
Yeah, it's like the scum rises to the top of the waters of life. That's how I see it. The scum rises to the top.
That's a great explanation.
In a way, I think it's also been the evolution of humankind on this planet. Like Gurdjieff, a mystic, compares it, there's seven levels of human evolution, and it's like a musical octave, and you go do, re, mi, and then you have a missing semitone, and most people only go do, re, mi, and they never get to fa, or to higher levels of evolution. And these degenerate type are caught in that cycle. And the next, if we're going to attain the new world, then we have to get to the fourth level of the awakening of the human heart. You see, these people are heartless. They'll spray your whole country, all the children, the animals, everyone, everything with chemtrails. They'll put poison in your vaccinations. They'll murder people for money. See, it's this lower degenerate type who rose and took over power, and the good people, in a way, we were too preoccupied and such. We didn't realize what was happening. Like in the night when we were asleep, they came and stole it all away. And now we're faced with this monster that's attained to this level of power and corruption. I mean, it's just incredible. I sometimes compare it to the Lord of the Rings tale, where the two towers, which are like the New York Towers, is followed by the return of the king, which I would see as the return of righteousness to the world. And I think we're at a critical period in the history of humankind. We're either going to awaken in the heart and bring a period of harmony and caring for humankind to the planet, which would give us a new age, not controlled by a psychopathic perverts, but of people who attain to the level of the consciousness of the heart. And the eternal nature you were talking about, Don, see, the self within the heart, that's where the God spark is. That's the divine spark is within the heart, and that's the eternal element. And being, just the being, not in the past or in the future, that's all ego, but the eternal beingness of a human being is connected to the higher dimensional physics of the human heart.
Yeah. Part of their, if I may say so, to both of you gentlemen, part of this whole affair is that they have created the illusion that heaven is going to occur here on earth. And amidst all of this perversion, amidst all of this negativity, this low vibration, the two cannot exist together. Heaven is a different place. That's a totally different frequency. That doesn't mean that this cannot be changed or that we cannot make better choices or, let's say, choices that are going to be positive as opposed to the ones we're making. Because you go along with the game and you see it bringing you down. They don't have the answers they claim to have. They don't. You only have to step outside for a tenth of a second to see that they don't have the answers, because if they did, we wouldn't have the problems. So their agenda is not to solve the problems, but to create them. And for the reasons you just described, Dr. Holmes.
Yeah, no, they don't have the answers. I mean, their philosophies are the totally most superficial intellectual English philosophy, like Bertrand Russell and these people. They're mentors are like totally superficial, flatland thinking and understanding. It's a lower level of intelligence. They identify self with the mind in the head, and they're egomaniacs. They're egomaniacs. They really are. They're pathologically disturbed. Like, I'm a forensic psychologist as well as a mystic. And they're psychopaths. They have no feeling or compassion for other people. All they care about is their own self-aggrandizement. And they don't care who they hurt or what they do. They're a degenerate type, and that's the problem we're faced with, is they've taken over.
Well, it's been this way for a long time. I think that that we're seeing it as a problem indicates that people are waking up. And I'm not saying that you've just discovered this. I don't know when you discovered this, but in general, the human beings are discovering this in the now.
And that's happening around the world, I think, is that's what's happening, is this huge awakening of humankind. All of a sudden, you have all this information on the internet, which is revealing the lies of, like, the Kennedy assassination, the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, the London bombings. All these things are being exposed. So people, if you wake up, and it's traumatizing to wake up and dissolve that whole false consciousness people have been conditioned into. But if you go through that, then you can be reborn in spirit and then attain to your heart and have courage. And courage actually comes from French. La cour means heart. Courage
heart,
is
from
having
the heart.
A new
yeah.
heart.
Yeah.
And I see that in truth seekers, like you fellows and other people out there bringing the truth out. You have courage. There's something in your heart. You're longing for truth or justice in the world that you have courage and you try to face this beast in modern times. So
yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me share I'll look forward to having time tomorrow.
I'm looking forward to the show tomorrow. For those that just joined us, that's Dr. Christopher Holmes, and I'm going to be on the Zero Point show tomorrow afternoon with him for 2 hours, right? So,
looking
forward very much to that, and I appreciate your call. Do you have a comment or question for Jim before you hang up?
Just one thing also is you got away from the idea of power and such. One thing I would say is there's a higher dimensional physics to the human heart that people have no idea of, and that we have zero-point centers rooted into higher dimensional space, and we ourselves are over-unity energy devices, that we are rooted into that deep levels of the quantum vacuum ourselves, and that people have no idea of what we might attain were we to awaken. Okay, thanks. I'll let you
go. I agree
very
with
much
that.
For the,
thank
go
you
ahead,
for
Jim.
Your great
thank you,
show.
Doctor.
Yeah, Jim, do you want to comment on what Dr. Holmes said?
Oh, well, I agree with what he said, even if we did get off track. You know, the fact of the matter is, we have discussed previously that that human beings, or at least living entities in general, are over-unity devices, if you want to use that term. And I think that one of the prime functions that we exhibit is the exchange of energy, the energy of life, for information. And that constitutes human evolution. And when that's interfered with, you don't evolve, which of course brings us right to what the doctor was describing. If you keep the level of evolution in the lower chakras or the lower animal instincts, you're never going to rise above that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I can see the mechanism. I mean, it's interesting because those drives or those desires are always catered to and always satiated. The attention remains there, and you never realize that there's more to yourself than that, unless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless something happens to you to boost your consciousness.
Yes.
So it's interesting because that in itself is a dead giveaway to the fact that even though the elite are psychopaths, as the doctor pointed out, they do have the knowledge. They do know what they're doing. And they do realize how humans are created, which
mm-hmm.
means that there must have been a point when they had access to the higher levels of mind and heart and chose to do evil with that information rather than good.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jim, I could look at science and medicine and the spirituality that Dr. Holmes just talked about and use the very case of my father having a stroke, being in a coma, telling the doctors and the nurses that we were going to pray regardless of what their prognosis was, regardless of what the numbers, what the statistics point to, I said, you have your science and we have ours. You have your faith and we have ours. And I had prophesied that there would be a miracle within 24 hours. We would see a miracle, and I knew that because I had asked my listening audience to pray with me, and I was praying with the utmost of faith, knowing that my father would would stay alive and return to health. Now, it's a traumatic thing to go through a stroke for anyone. Even a mild stroke is a very traumatic shock to the whole system, to the brain, to the circulatory system, to the nervous system. And on a spiritual level, you have to realize that the spirit is perfect. And so it becomes an issue of opening the flow of all that is to come in and allow healing to take place. You put that in God's hands. This is not something that I did or my listening audience did other than to express to the Creator our gratitude, which is often described as grace or mercy. So, certainly something that we don't get from the system down here on this planet. Okay? Now, within 5.5 hours, that miracle arrived, and my father opened his eyes, which basically they said my father was brain dead, but he opened his eyes, and he moved, and he responded to speech. And today and yesterday, he spoke and sat up. Okay, and he's, you can tell that it was very traumatic, the whole experience. So it's going to take time to heal. Yet, the healing has occurred. It's just that the body has to catch up with what's occurred on a spiritual level. Now, the doctor that told me that there are very slim odds that my father would survive approached me after my father had come out of the coma, and he said, "Is your family very spiritual?" And I said, "What do you think?" And he didn't know how to respond. He didn't have a thought about it. It never occurred to him that there was an ice cream cone's chance in hell that my father would wake up. And yet my father did wake up, you see. And my father is improving, you see. So that is demonstration of this principle that what Dr. Holmes described as operating from the heart center, and just knowing, feeling intuitively that zero point aspect of who we are. I know exactly what he's saying because I approached it from that point, and I approached not just me, everyone who added their prayer power to that affirmed that same thing. There's tremendous power when somebody can do that. Now, if my listening audience can do that and affect the health of someone they don't even know, what would happen if we all did this together for our country, for ourselves? What would happen if we applied that kind of power, regardless of what they're doing? Because this is all smoke and mirrors and illusions. You know, we'll break the mirrors, we'll crack the mirrors, and they'll have 7 years of bad luck. You know, to use their phrases. They'll have 7 years of bad luck. In the meantime, we move on and keep creating and co-creating. It's our turn. That's why we came here. That's why you came here, Jim. That's why I came here. That's why Dr. Holmes came here. That's why Don and Doug Newsom started BBS Radio, to deliver a message to people that they do have a choice. They do have power. Just recognize it. And you have to silence the mind, and you do have to go into the heart and not be afraid of that silence. You mentioned it yourself too, Jim. And Dr. Holmes mentioned it. People are afraid of not hearing the noise and the chaos that they've been experiencing most of their lives, if not the entirety of their lives. And now that's sort of breaking up. And, you know, if we didn't have the internet, this would still be possible, and we don't need the internet to make it possible, because they've turned that into chaos as well. The answers are still within one's heart, and if you have a soul, you've already won the game. It's just a question of recognizing it, coming to the realization that it is so. And there's no other possibility. And those are choices that we make individually. I can't force anyone to do that. They've got to make that choice themselves. But if they're seeking that, we're telling them how to get there. Recognize what's being done. Get out of the matrix and just look at what's happening to other people, and you'll see what's happening to you.
Well, Dr. Holmes mentioned something that's really worth repeating, because he sprayed out such a multitude of significant facts in such a short period of time that some people may have overlooked the importance of this one statement. And that is, you don't have to be dead to lose your soul. You know, you make that choice, and you lower your own vibrations to the point where the soul light goes out or becomes insignificantly small. That is actually achieved by your own efforts during your lifetime. So for anybody that has fear of the hereafter, you might want to realize that what's going to happen to you after death is being determined right now.
Yeah. And in respect to what you said and to what Dr. Holmes said, he mentioned the word courage. We see courage.
That's right.
Or the average person sees courage in a movie, don't they? They like the story of the hero. They like to see the hero succeed and get the woman in the end. Although that's been perverted. They'd like to see the man get the man, or the woman get the woman. The point I'm making is that we, because we know on some level that what we see in the movies is fiction, even if it's a true story, they have to fictionalize it in the way they present it to us to cause us to react the same way. But we see then in a fictional or in an illusory setting, we see a hero exemplify courage. And then on a subconscious level, we say, well, that can't be me. That's only in the movies that happens. Or we hear about the acts of courage, but we're never really told all the circumstances. We're never afforded the opportunity to hear that person speak except through the means they choose or they decide we are to hear about that heroism or that heroic act. And they don't really call it courage, do they? They say, so-and-so is a hero. Even if they murdered millions of people, they're a hero. Because they say it. And so people worship. It's another aspect of idol worship. And yet, each of us has a potential to be our own hero, in a sense, just by recognizing that we do have courage within us. But you have to stop the noise to see it, or to feel it, or to know it. It's insight. Seeing, looking, and seeing within that where you'll find it. And no one's ever taken the courage away. They've just put it to sleep. They've numbed it. They've paralyzed it. And they paralyze it through analysis. I mean, we're analyzing this in a sense, but I'm more or less making observations here. I'm not making judgments. Krishnamurti said, analysis causes paralysis. In a sense, he's right about that, or was right about that, because it always causes us to go back into the past and speak from the ego mind, or as Dr. Holmes pointed out, and I agree, Peter Kayander calls it the monkey mind. It's the monkey mind. Everybody doing what they see the other monkeys doing, until the 100th monkey decides, hey, I got a new way to do it, and he just does it, and then the other monkeys follow. Humanity is very much like that, with the exception that they allow these degenerates to tell them what to do. And they, because they've created this facade of who they are and what they represent, that the people just accept it, because it's easier. You know, we voted them in. Let's let them do their job. Their job is to steal and rob and murder and deceive. And that's all they do. But they call it other things. And they call those that speak out against them things, more illusion as well. Because they feel threatened. You see, they are the ones that are ultimately controlled. They are the ones that ultimately have fear. And their biggest fear is losing the power that they believe they have.
I agree with you. And it's very evident, too, because every time that they enact another law or try and do something else to change or confine society, it's a reflection of a concern on their part.
A fear, isn't it?
Like you mentioned earlier. Yeah, a fear. Like you mentioned earlier. Who ever heard of such an idiotic thing as passing a law against bumper stickers? But you see, they don't want that avenue of expression available, because obviously it must be effective. And it's the same with every other law. You know, it's really amazing when you go back to look at common law. They only had two basic laws originally, breach and I forget what the other one was, assault or something. But anyway, there were only two laws originally. And the entire world that embraced that system was effectively governed by it, because it's so self-evident. But now how many laws do we have? Of course, they come under the guise of statutes, but nonetheless, there's millions of them. Nobody can count them, never mind live by them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all an effort to control you to the point where you can't even function.
Yes. Well, there, you know, tomorrow I hope to discuss this this issue with Dr. Holmes on a level, you know, we'll probably talk about some political and religious aspects of this, because this is really how they're playing the game. Now, there are other elements. The mind control is there, but it's all from the same source. Same source is playing this. This is not the way it's portrayed. This is not the Russians coming after us or the Chinese coming after us. All of those societies are controlled by British Israelism. And you mentioned Freud. Freud worked at Tavistock. He set up the mold for the mind control that is used by the Jesuits and by Skull and Bones and by Zionism, communists, fascists, the Vatican, Opus Dei, the OTO, all of these secret societies that practice satanic worship and every form of perversion that you can imagine. And all the things that we've been discussing, they're all under the cloak of British Israelism. First it was just on the seas, now it's on the land, all over the world. And it's just a mind game. It's a mind game. It's one hand not knowing what the other does, and at the same time, it's all planned out. It's all planned. It's very, very devious. You could call it like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And they go to great extents to educate children in the schools by putting this stuff in the textbooks and reference books and in the books of what I would call pseudo history experts. These are people that wrote the history the way they wanted it to be, because it's all illusion, and they get people to buy it by repetition, just repeating it over and over, like they do a TV ad or a radio ad. And that's how the hamster wheel turns, doesn't it? It turns in a circle. It makes a complete revolution, and it begins the process all over again.
Well, they've certainly been at it long enough to have it perfected. But the exciting thing is that apparently we are beginning to see a lot of people breaking out of the mold and starting to think on their own. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, you know, we didn't even comment on it really, but tonight, as far as I know, was the first time we had two callers ever on one show, wasn't it?
I think we've had two before. Well, our first call was pretty early, so that made it that made it a bit different. Although we made Leo wait a little bit, and I think, you know, what Leo mentioned is really what we ended up talking about here. I know we wanted to get into this technology aspect. I guess we have to try to do it next week, but this is part of the reason why, because you and I had this discussion earlier off the air about why these technologies are repressed, why the inventors are murdered.
And why the other form of power is so prevalent.
Yes. Yes, and it's a question of frequency control. I mean, you know, if you look at motive power and how it's progressed in terms of a farmer, there are still some Amish farmers that use a plow and a horse or a mule. To them, that gets the job done. And certainly, you don't hear much complaint about the food that the Amish produce. Or any people that work with the land, absent of technology. We don't even think about how they produce their crops, and yet for a modern farmer to produce crops, he's got to spend several million dollars in different types of equipment, harvesting equipment, and it does facilitate what he has to do. But now you think of a perverted society that pays them to not grow the food, while they complain that there's not enough food to go around. That's psychopathy right there. That's exactly what Dr. Holmes described. These are the kinds of decisions that our, quote, leaders, unquote, make. It's insanity. Its purpose cannot be what it's presented to be. And like you say, Jim, why can't we see that? Well, it's such a low frequency. It's a spiritual issue. It becomes spiritual warfare.
Well, when you bring all these things out as you have done, it paints a really nasty picture. But at the same time, if you look for the other side of the coin, so to speak, it makes you wonder what it must be like on other worlds where these problems have been long ago put to rest. I mean, I don't think we could even conceive of what kind of an environment a world like that would have, where everybody is operating in the higher chakras and pursuing their God-given gifts to the fullness that they are allowed to do, and making positive contributions to the entire planet. It must be almost like heaven on earth in some of those places.
Well, when one goes into the heart, one sees it, one knows it, and one remembers it. The answer to your question is within all of us.
Well, I realize it's in all of us from a standpoint of potential, but I'm talking about other worlds where it may already be put into practice, you know, universally. It's got to be an incredibly different place.
That's exactly what I meant, Jim. That's exactly what I meant. When one enters the silence and one one can tap into that. One remembers that. Where would that memory come from? It's not an illusion. It would come from that experience and having reopened that pathway or that gateway to that experience. In fact, it can be happening at the same time, right now.
Well, I know I've had experiences of that type, although they're not necessarily frequent.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about them is that they're mysterious in the sense that the reality of it is unquestionable, even though you can't share it with somebody else because of its subjective nature. But the intensity is so incredible that it's on a par with what we consider to be our normal everyday life.
Exactly. You know? That's what I was referring to when I spoke about my comment back to the doctor when he asked, your family, is it very spiritual? My comment was, what do you think? I answered the question with a question, which caused him to move to that space. There was only one conclusion he could draw from that. You follow me? This is what Dr. Holmes was talking about, you see, that we do have that within us, and I know you know that as well. We can stay caught up in it, or we can trust that it is there. And I speak about it with conviction because I'm convinced. It's part of my experience. So to answer your question, there are planets that are just as insane as what's going on here on Earth, and there are planets that have total peace and technology beyond your wildest imagination. And they're waiting for us to wake up. And that's the big secret down here, because they don't want us to wake up. Because we will leave them behind to their own devices. So, Jim, we're out of time. We've extended our time, and I want to thank Don Newsom for allowing us that privilege. Closing comment.
Well, actually, closing comment is hard to precipitate because your remarks had me exploring those higher realms in an imaginative sense, and with a certain degree of longing. I mean, it would be a wonderful thing to transform this planet from the muck bucket that it is now into something of a higher level. But at least we're making a stab at it.
Yes. Yes, we are. And the email is flooding in from tonight's show. So, looking forward.
You'll have to give me some feedback on that when the time comes.
I will. I will do that, and we will continue this conversation next week. And I promise you, I guess we had to lay some more foundation here, Jim. This is a deep subject. And when we talk about the technological aspects of what is available to us next week, we will have laid a foundation on which to bring all that information forward.
Well, just so you know, I'm not in any hurry to do it. It's much more important to get as many people on board as possible on all levels rather than to worry about specific technologies, because once people start to understand these things that we're trying to share with them, they're going to be able to dip into their own creative pools and come up with technological innovations of their own. They don't necessarily have to follow our agenda.
Yeah, well, I don't think this is our agenda exclusively. I think a lot of people are drawn to this message from different directions. We're not the only ones, you know, speaking about these things. So I want to... No, absolutely not. We had two calls tonight that are thinking outside the box, and are to be commended for doing so. So I thank you for your contribution to the show tonight, and it's time to say goodnight, so I wish you a great weekend and look forward to next week's show with you. And I'll say goodnight for the both of us. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest every Friday, my co-host Jim Murray. And special thanks go to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Don was running the sound tonight. Thank you, Don. Great job. And most of all, the callers, Leo and Dr. Christopher Holmes. Be sure to tune in to Zero Point tomorrow. Try to catch RBN tomorrow afternoon, 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern, Voices from the Heartland with Greg Evenson. I'll be his two-hour guest. In the meantime, I wish everyone a wonderful weekend, and I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and a good night.